What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Redshirt Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to make a bunch of top five lists like I asked him, Alex Perkins. Perk, how are you doing tonight?
I'm well, thanks. I successfully failed the assignment.
I'm pretty sure I said that same intro to you last year. I think you said the same thing. But what else are we going to do? I mean, it's a special episode. We're celebrating the year. We're excited to talk about our favorite films that we watched in 2023. Yeah. I'm sure you've seen by the title. We're going to be going over our favorite films of last year. We got three different top fives we're going to go through. First, our favorite movies that we watched on the podcast for the podcast. Second, our top five films that came out in 2023, so 2023 movies. And then the last one, just the aggregate, everything you watched, what are your top five? Should be a good time. I feel like our show, we post pretty much every Friday on YouTube and podcast services. We'll be back to normal programming next week. If you like our show, tell your friends about it. Come watch movies with us and follow us on TikTok, all that good stuff. But let's get into it, Perk. I want to start talking about these lists because I'm curious to see how many we have in common. And I feel like in this year, just on the like for the podcast movies, you liked more than I did. So I wonder if your list might be a bit different than mine.
Yeah, we'll have to see, because I feel like there's also a little bit more of an even landscape this year. Like mm-hmm. I feel like last year we had a lot in common because we watched some like all timers, and you know we right. got a bunch of good ones this year too. But it's not as easy to say Petite Maman because it's like right. one of my five favorite films of all time.
Right, know? Right.
There weren't as many gimmies.
Yeah, not as many gimmies. I think we watched more movies this year that you hadn't seen at least. Yeah. Last year, which was good.
I'll add that as a qualifier before we even start. I precluded movies that I had seen prior to like the show just yeah. for the sake of my own sanity, because generally if I picked them, I had seen them, like I've kind of poisoned the well a little bit.
Yeah, so. I'm in the same boat. I didn't do any rewatches on any of my lists. Let's jump into it. So our top five movies that we watched on the podcast in 2023, we watched 45 movies, not quite the same as 2022, but close enough.
Within a rounding error.
It was like 2022 plus like a month, because we started it in like October, December of 2021.
Oh, sure.
And here's how we'll do this, Perk. So we'll go, 5-5-4-4-3-3.
Yep.
But if I say a movie and it's on your list and it's higher, just say it's on. I have that higher, and we'll not talk about it until we get to the highest point of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's fair.
So that way we can save the discussion for when we're like most excited to talk about it.
Fair enough.
I'll start us off here with my number five.
Which one are we doing?
Podcast movies first.
Okay, podcast movies. Well, then I'll start you off with my number six.
Okay, you're cheating,
I did not respect the rules. I have on here, just as like, because I wanted to mention it, I've got the Bahubali movies. Which am I good to talk about them?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so I think it's easily the best 5.5-hour epic that we watched mm-hmm. this year. Mm-hmm. And like, I didn't even rate it that highly on whatever, garbage Letterboxd score. But I think about that movie a lot.
Yeah.
Just how goofy and how fun and how unique and awesome and full of lore and full of great action and goofy CGI. Those two movies are just a really fun package. So I figured I'd throw them in at number six to give them a mention.
Yeah.
All right. Now on with your list.
All right. Well, shout out to S.S. Rajamouli. He's the GOAT. Definitely want to watch more of his movies at some point. He's just amazing. Yeah, Bahubali was such an experience, and I'm so happy we got to have that this year on the podcast. For my list, I'll just say, too, to kind of explain how I made this. Like, it's based on not the best, like, my technically the best movies. It's just, like, how much do I like them? How much do I think about them? What are, like, my feelings towards this movie? Like, what are the movies I have the most feelings for?
I agree. It's not, like... Art is subjective, so it's not, there's not going to be an objective, like, best or worst. It's just, your experience with it.
Yeah. So that being said, my number five, recency bias, maybe, but All the President's Men. I thought this was an absolutely fantastic film. Like I said last week, we talked about it, like I was not expecting to like this movie going in, and I was just really blown away by the performances and the like, just how well directed it was and how they like, brought you into that setting and that time period. And, you know, I love a good kind of story about two guys, journalists, trying to track down what really happened. And yeah, I just had a great time in this movie, and it was just a very nice surprise for me.
Yeah, it's not on my list, but I think it's for like the exact opposite recency bias. Like I haven't I haven't had enough time to process, but yeah, it's fantastic. I think it's definitely a good shot. It is absolutely one of the best movies we've watched in the last year.
Yeah, and definitely need to see more Hoffman and more Redford, because my God, they brought it.
they're good at what they do.
Mm-hmm. All right, Perk, what's your number five?
All right, at five, I've got Princess Mononoke. The Ghibli joint, which we watched. Was that our first Ghibli, or did we do Howl first?
No, I don't remember.
Well, they were back-to-back weeks. I remember that. But having not had an experience with a Ghibli movie since I was a kid, and being able to go see this movie in a theater it was a really awesome experience, and I don't think I had ever seen this one at all. So being able to kind of come to this, it's a great story. It's absolutely gorgeous animation. And I'm a fiend for Ghibli, as we'll talk about later. But I really, really enjoyed my experience with this one. And when it was juxtaposed next to Howl, which I thought was fairly mediocre, just kind of more emphasized for me how much I enjoyed Mononoke.
Yeah. Yeah. With Ghibli, the given is the attention to detail, and Mononoke is all over that movie. And I also really enjoyed it. I don't know. I've realized this year that I think Ghibli is not necessarily for me, or not always for me. It's not like a given I'm going to like them. But I still really enjoyed Mononoke, and I thought it was really beautiful movie, and just some really stunning and creepy imagery in there.
Definitely.
So, yeah. All right. My number four, Thelma and Louise.
I got that one higher.
Okay. We'll wait to talk about it then.
All right. My number four, In the Chungking Four Express.
Yeah.
So I went with Chungking Express, but it's pretty much a dead heat for me on the two, Wong Kar-wai movies.
I had to make a decision there as well. Yeah.
Okay. So I did pick Chungking, mainly because of the movie, the song Dreams by the Cranberries. But it's hard to describe. It's just kind of like a vibe movie. I love the setting. I love the feel. Love the chemistry. The score is great, and the direction is very cool. There are a lot of cool things that Wong Kar-wai does with the camera, and like the romance in his movies is kind of set apart from most other romances I've seen in film. I think he just does such a great job with them.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll just say now, my number three is In the Mood for Love. So, like, I had to decide as well, and I went with In the Mood. But to talk about Chungking first, I think the reason I picked Mood over Chungking is just because of the Chungking is split in half. There's, like, two separate storylines, which, like, is good. I just think I like the through light of Mood more. But, yeah, Chungking is fantastic. Wong Kar-wai. Discovering him this year, this dude is a madman. Like, how he makes movies is absolutely insane. Where every morning he writes the script and he shoots just day by day, chronological order of the story, which I think when you're growing up, at least for me, I thought I assumed all movies were made is you shoot them in order of the scenes.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much never the case. But for Wong Kar-wai, it is. And it results in just very, very honest feeling characters and some incredible just like emotions that I feel like aren't captured often. And I think he just does that by just having his characters and actors just like really dive deep and think a lot about what would this character do. And for me, In the Mood for Love, like it's such a heartbreaking story, but it's told so well. of these two people that are both in marriages that they're unhappy in, and both their spouses are cheating, but they don't want to cheat, but they love this person. Like, it's, oh, man, it's just such a ball of emotion. Like, it's just, it's so compelling to watch, and it's directed masterfully. And yeah, I love it.
And it has the correct ending, unlike Lost in Translation.
Yes, 100%. Even though it is very tragic still, but yeah, Wong Kar-wai. I'm so happy we saw his movies this year, and as another director I want to see more from. So yeah, In the Mood for Love, fantastic.
All right,
back to you, Perk. Give me number three.
I got Perfect Blue on here.
I have it higher.
Yeah, I figured you would.
Yeah.
All right. What do you got? What do you got for two, Jacob?
Two, I got Three Idiots.
Okay.
I intentionally slash not intentionally kind of picked like one from each kind of set, like string we did, you know? Mm-hmm. And when we're doing the Indian string, like Three Idiots really surprised me. Like, that movie is so fun. It's so funny. It's so joyous, but also like will just punch you in the gut out of the blue, but it works. I mentioned, I think when we were in that string, like, Bollywood movies remind me a lot of anime, where they can kind of, they're kind of hyper emotional, and also then kind of span a large range of emotions, and it all feels genuine. And I think Three Idiots does that super well. Of just having,
like, you'll literally be like laughing on the floor, and then within 5 minutes be crying your eyes out.
Yeah. Like it's insane how it manages that. And, Amir Khan kills it as a lead. Like he was, what we say in that trivia, he was like 35 or 40 or something.
Yeah, he was like 40 playing like a 22-year-old.
Like, absolutely nuts.
Because you can't really tell.
No. I mean, people in college movies also, they always kind of look a little bit older, but he didn't look that much older. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like the music was so fun. Like, I remember like when they're in like the bathroom and they're like in the, like the tubs, you know, all that scene is really good. And
oh yeah, the dance scene in the bathroom.
And like the villain is like very kind of like comical, but he works and he has like some interesting, it's rooted in like a real emotion and a real problem, like, and they're trying to kind of bring light to. So yeah, I don't know, it's just like a really, really solid movie, and I was just very happy with it and very surprised by it.
That was a great payoff too.
I
love Three Idiots as well. It didn't make my list, but once again, just another in like the large pack of really good movies we watched this year.
Yeah, for sure. All right, number two.
All right, this is where I got Thelma and Louise.
All right.
So just like this we watched in our little string of Ridley Scott movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a great story about what I quoted. This is a genius quote for me, the best bromance ever put to film, which, you know, arguably romance, depending on how you interpret, but it's just the two main characters and the actors portraying them have such impeccable chemistry, and their relationship is so well fleshed out, and their almost like foiled character arcs are so perfect in how they kind of go in opposite directions and wind up connecting back at the end. Tied in with like a very interesting story and chain of events, some really punchy events that kind of seem a little bit challenging for maybe the time, and also good direction and some really good like action chase scenes, which
fantastic
I wasn't
scenes.
Anticipating. So like overall, this is a movie that I had, you know, hadn't seen, but kind of knew where the ending went. And at the time when I like found out the ending, I'm like, that's dumb. That's such a dumb way to end it. And like I said, after watching the movie, I'm like, I'm getting in with you.
Yeah.
take me with, I'm on board.
Throw me in the trunk. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. No, I love this movie. And I think the things I love about the most are how the roles reverse throughout the course of the movie, as they kind of find themselves and get further along in this kind of crazy situation they found themselves in. Super ahead of its time. I mean, it's still incredibly relevant, and yeah, great action set pieces, which was a big surprise, but I was like, man, these chase scenes are freaking awesome. So yeah, I won't say much more. I ditto everything you said. Yeah, absolutely great movie. And I'm really happy we watched it. And I didn't fully know the ending. Once I saw it, I was like, oh yeah, I've seen it before. But it's still, yeah, it hit super hard. So it's a great one. So yeah, my number one, Perfect Blue. My top three, I was moving around a lot. I'm like, man, I don't know like how I want to order this. And I don't want to be like, oh, I'm the anime guy, so put anime as number one. But like Perfect Blue just genuinely was like insanely good. Like we got to see this in the theaters. I was so happy. This was because we watched Paprika, and I've also seen Paranoia Agent Satoshi Kon's show. And this is the only one of his three projects that I've seen that I've actually like, okay, I fully like this because it wraps up perfectly. Like it culminates in such an amazing way. And the mystery is revealed, and everything makes sense by the end. But yeah, the sense of paranoia throughout this movie builds so well, and it makes sense. The main character is losing her mind and you feel bad for her, and then when everything like reveal at the end, it'll make sense. And it's genuinely like scary and frightening. And I'm not seeing much better portrayals of like paranoia in a movie. So yeah, Perfect Blue was just incredible.
Yeah, just the way that the way that it's directed to the point where you start questioning your perception of things. Like, wait, yeah. Did I accidentally rewind? Haven't we seen this before? And because it's just so well done that like the audience is almost losing their minds along with the main character. Mm-hmm. This is like the best tension in a movie among the best I've ever seen.
Yeah.
A great score that backs that up too. And just an absolutely enthralling story that is like scarily prescient about like today. Like the parasocial relationship aspect of this movie is strikingly present in today's society.
Yeah.
So I like this was my number three. But as you said, ranking lists is hard. So
yeah. The only knock I have is I just wish it looked a little better, but I know it's because the original like reel of the footage was destroyed.
Yeah.
So it's like, I wish we can get like a remaster or something somehow someday about it. Cause it's like, I just want to look even crisper, but what a freaking amazing movie. I definitely want to watch it again at some point.
For sure.
All right, Perk, what's the number one? I don't know what you're going to say here.
Yeah, so we're throwing it way back. I got Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Thinking back, I was just scanning through the list of all of our episodes to kind of, spark memory, see what all we watched, because there were a few that I forgot to log. Mm-hmm. And Crouching Tiger, oh my God. This is like the coolest action movie I've ever seen. The characters are great. Michelle Yeoh rocks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blanking on her name, but the other woman is also fantastic. Yeah. The stylized nature of the action, where everything is very quiet and precise, and the wire work is just beyond cool.
So fun.
And the fact that we just out of coincidence, we picked this movie for our podcast and then checked and it was in theaters. Mm-hmm. And that I got to go see this on a big screen
in
2023 was such a wonderful experience. And I out of coincidence, three of these movies that I had on my five we were able to see in theaters.
Yeah.
I think awesome. It adds a lot to the experience. And Crouching Tiger is I want to watch it again like right now.
It's
such an awesome story. So that's where I got it up number one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm there with you. The other actress is Zee Zhang, by the way.
Yes.
Great in Hero. But
yes.
Yeah. Crouching Tiger
was close, but I didn't put both of them on there, even though I really liked both.
Yeah. Yeah. Crouching Tiger is fantastic. Just the creativity in the fights and the wire work and all that is just like so fun to watch. And like, that's a movie you can kind of put on anytime. I think you just have a great time with it.
Absolutely.
And like I said, performances are great. Story's fun. And it's a freaking great movie. So, all right. Well, that is our top five movies that we watched on the pod this year. Pretty solid year. I think like China and India in particular, I think had a lot of fun with.
Yes, definitely. I think it's shown in our in our lists, but we,
yeah,
it's very cool to get kind of exposure to styles that we wouldn't normally see, yeah, parts of the world that we don't have as much experience with.
Yeah. Well, now, Perk, let's move on to our top five 2023 releases. All right.
Okay.
My God, this became a contentious year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, it did. So much stuff came out at the end. Yeah.
Yeah, which is why my top five has 8 films.
Okay. Dude, come on. I had to cut stuff. You had to cut stuff too.
No, because I don't respect the rules, as I already said. But I'll be quick on the 3 that I don't technically have.
All right. I'm baffled. Like, Across the Spider-Verse didn't make my top five, which is insane, yeah, to me.
No, there are a lot of movies that are on the outside looking in, and it's like, wow, in what I thought was not going to be a very competitive year, it ended up being extremely competitive.
Yeah.
And one struggle I had too is there's so much, at least for me on this list, there's so much less stratification as opposed to what I had last year. And maybe this will look a little different when I get to the, at some point I'll try and watch all the best pictures, best picture nominees. It was a little bit easier to break those apart because, like, Banshees and Everything Everywhere at Once were like a step above, like a clear step above the rest of them for me. And then past that, you know, I mean, Avatar was nominated, like Triangle of Sadness was not good, yeah, and it was nominated. Yeah. So it's easier to kind of stratify everything apart. Whereas there are a lot of movies that this year I just watched them and I'm like, that's a 5-star movie. I loved, yeah, that. I loved everything, yeah, about that. And it's hard to like break that apart, especially when you're comparing some incredibly different movies. But I don't know. I'm rambling.
Well, how about this? Let's do our 5, then we can do honorable mentions after that.
No, that I'll just get them out of the way now.
What if you're on... Your extras are on my list, you know. Let's do our 5, and then we'll talk about extras after.
All right,
enough. I also have some honorable mentions I want to talk about.
Fair enough.
You go first, Perk. What's your number 5?
All right, number 5, which is astonishingly low for how much I like this movie. I've got Past Lives, which is the story of a woman in New York who gets back in touch with a guy that they grew up together in Korea before her family moved to Toronto. They connect, and she's married now to a Jewish man in New York, and they reconnect, and there's a lot of small scenes, a lot of quiet, a lot of space, and a great score and great performances and like the best love story. Yeah. The best love story I watched this year. Yeah, I could gush about Past Lives, but not very specifically. So I would say, like, I know you've been trying to catch it. So
yeah, once the HBO Max deal goes through with A24, I'll watch it for sure.
Yeah, I'm really curious on when that's going to happen because
yeah,
I kind of need it to. But yeah, yeah, Past Lives, I got in at 5.
All right. Yeah, I can't talk about it because I've seen it, but I will definitely watch it when I get the chance. My number 5 is Oppenheimer.
Okay, I have it higher, yeah.
All right, I'll go back to you then.
Okay, number 4, I've got The Holdovers.
That's higher for me.
Yeah, all right.
Really gives me a lot of this. My number 4 is Poor Things.
I got it higher.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, back to you.
Oppenheimer, yeah.
We made it. Okay, all right. I'm glad it's still like relatively low on your list because I felt like guilty. I know I shouldn't feel guilty at being my number 5. That's still like in this year is kind of nuts. But yeah. Anyway,
go ahead. It's crazy to, I don't know. Internet culture is just warping my brain, but I almost felt bad for like putting a Christopher Nolan movie on my top 5 because it's like a faux pas now. But Oppenheimer's really good. It's a incredible, like for a movie that's 3 hours long, the pacing is so fast. Everything is just like, it's always going. It's like a clock ticking. And the performances are all great. The direction is great. Some scenes in there are really well edited in really cool ways. It looks gorgeous. I don't know. I went and saw this movie 3 times in 3 different formats because of like It's just, it was such a fantastic cinematic experience. This is another one too, where like watching it on your phone is not going to be as awesome. Like, I think it'll still hold up because a lot of it is dialogue and a lot of courtrooms and stuff, but seeing it on that big screen and the test scene and the like gymnasium scene, it's just, it was a visceral cinematic experience. So it is probably tipped for best picture. I don't think that's a bad shout at all.
Yeah. No, this movie is just technically just so incredible. It's shot so well. It looks incredible. Sound design's incredible. And the performances, like Cillian Murphy, Emily Blunt, Robert Downey Jr., like everyone's just on top of their game. And they're telling a story that is incredibly, like, it's difficult. It's like tragic. And I think it ends on the perfect note. It was just a sight to behold. I try not to like fangirl over Nolan too much. I have some issues with him and I love all of his movies, but you can't say that. This movie just, it's really incredible. And it was such a feat to create. And I started to say a great time watching it because it's kind of fucked up the story, but it's just an incredible, incredible film. All right. Is that back to me now? That was your four, right?
Yeah. We're at your two, I believe. No, that was my three. Yeah. So
that was your three.
Yeah. What's your three?
What was your four?
Holdovers.
Oh yeah. You started. Okay. Sorry. All right. My number three is American Fiction.
Okay. That's an honorable mention.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So Burke and I just saw this weekend. And I really wanted to see it before we made our list. Cause I'm like, there's a chance this makes it. And it obviously did. This movie was so freaking funny. Like this, I saw Perk in the theater, like, this is a great year for comedy with Barbie, American Fiction, and Poor Things. But this movie is just absolutely hilarious. There was multiple times where I feel like the audience was laughing. We missed a joke because we were still laughing from the previous one, which is a good sign. And I want to watch it again just to catch everything.
There's a lot that, like, I was giggling and no one else was. And so that, like, you picked up on some of that stuff too, but there's some subtleties that definitely, like, a second watch will be rewarded because I'm sure there's a ton of jokes in there that I didn't pick up on just because, like, my blinders were on too tight.
Yeah. Yeah. Watching it with captions, that could be really good. So on the whole, like, face of it, it's funny. On top of that, the family dynamic at the heart of this movie is really powerful. And like, yeah, there's one scene with Sterling K. Brown that has really got me. It kind of needed that to like ground the movie, and I appreciate it there. It's kind of like Everything Ever All at Once, where the movie's like so insane, you can kind of get lost in what's going on, but it's a family story at the heart of it. And that will always kind of bring you back. And the same with American Fiction, where a story about a man who kind of has to take the reins of his family, kind of take care of everybody, make sure everyone's good, and not being used to that role and kind of adapting to that, just really grounds the movie. And then on top of that, the commentary in this film, I think, is just incredibly poignant and relevant, mainly about, for me, it was like the discussion about like how diversity and inclusion in America right now is kind of all talk, or a lot of talk and not a lot of actually helping people. It's kind of just for show.
It's more PR.
Exactly. So I think that's an important conversation to have now, right now, because I think a lot of people, and white people especially, think like, oh, we're doing diversity, so like we're fine. And it's like, now we should look at this more closely. So it balances all three of those things so perfectly. And I just had such a great time with this movie. I really want to watch it again, just for the last, but also for everything in it. So, great, great, great movie.
Yeah, it is genuinely funny, like a lot of clever, like belly laugh type stuff where it's just, oh, I like that. That was good. Not just slapstick and all that. But I think that it's kind of like a peanut butter and jelly movie where you've got two kind of components that work together really well and weave together in a great way with the family story on the one side and the authorship commentary on the other. And I think that they complement each other really well and work together to make a really awesome movie. Just a great experience. So many movies around this time end up being hard watches, and this one was not. It was sitting back with like a glass of wine. Yeah. Which the characters do really often.
Yes. Yeah. Also, and shout out to Jeffrey Wright. He's amazing.
Yeah, he's great. And I love the score too. I'll keep talking about scores, but this year was a great year for scores, in my opinion.
Hell yeah. All right, so now we're on your number two, correct?
Yeah, you don't have this one, that's for sure. the Boy and the Heron, I got here number two.
All right.
It's Miyazaki at his most Miyazaki. He brings pieces of his other past triumphs and weaves them into a very autobiographical story of a boy escaping into a fantasy world to cope with grief, and an old man trying to keep that facade standing in his last days. It's gorgeous. The voice acting, which I saw the American version and I thought the voice acting was great. I'm saying it's gorgeous again, cause it's gorgeous. I like the story. I like the characters, even if, like the aunt is a little less developed. Once again, the score,
score is incredible.
Sorry. I'm a little excited. The score in this one is so beautiful and epic and radiant and just resonated so well with me. So yeah, this near the top.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I won't go into my thoughts too much. It wasn't fully for me, but I'm really happy for everyone who enjoyed it. And Miyazaki was supposed to retire, but he's like, nah, I'm still back. I'm back in the studio again. So I'm sure we'll get a delivery from him
at some point.
All right. My number two was The Holdovers.
Okay.
Man, this movie, man. We talked about it a lot, and from the first trailer, I was like, okay, it's cool. They're shooting this in like this kind of old camera, like 70s, I think it is. It looks like a 70s movie. I'm curious if they pull it off, and they completely do. Like, you're immediately transported back to this time period, to this private school in upstate New York. And man, just the performances in this movie are just absolutely incredible. The dialogue and the insults are just top tier. I keep going back to that. Like, this movie's just written just perfectly well. I just love it. I just absolutely love it. It feels like a warm hug, which you said a lot, but it also, it's surprising to say that because of the amount of conflict in this movie, amount of people fighting with each other, but it just, I don't know, it just works. Like, and the ending is a little sad, but like completely like is what it should be. And
it's hopeful, I think.
Yeah, it's hopeful. And yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of lost for words. Like, I just really, really love this movie, and it succeeded at everything it was trying to do.
Yes. I also just, I really love this movie. I thought that the acting was outstanding, which was recognized by the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
Shout out, with Divine Joy Randolph and Paul Giamatti picking up acting awards. It's just such a good story. It's got a great central relationship in the bond that the teacher and the student form. And all of the characters go on their own journeys. It's not one note where there's just one character arc to follow. And the setting and the way everything's structured and the attention to detail for the 70s is so good. It feels like the movie was shot back then. It's just such a great, like, familial type movie. Just a great little put together family. Good story.
Yeah, I'd much rather watch this at Christmas than pretty much any other Christmas movie at this point.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's just so high quality. Mm-hmm. Perk, I think I know your number one.
Yeah, we already mentioned it, but I got Poor Things up here. Mm-hmm. And it's like ranking stuff like this is stupid because I love all these movies, and how are you going to compare Poor Things to The Holdovers? But
yeah,
I'm gonna try. Basically, this movie is what if you like, it's a exercise in what if you took one of my favorite directors and gave them a big budget, and it, what do you know? It's awesome. The direction is awesome. The cinematography is great. The like weird CG landscapes in the background are awesome. The set design of this like hyperpunk setting. Just very cool, very well put together. The acting across the board is fantastic, especially Emma Stone, who has to she has to do so much for this for this role.
Yeah,
and I think she does it all so well, because there are a lot of moments that would come off really terribly if someone with less deft hands or maybe less commitment was trying to do them.
Mm-hmm.
Rami Yusuf is great. Willem Dafoe is great. Mark Ruffalo is awesome. He's such a goofball in this, and it's just great to watch. The story is amazing. It's unlike anything I've seen on film. I think we called it the R-rated Barbie, because it shares a lot of interesting independence and empowerment messages, and just a little bit of a different lens. But yeah, the story's great. I don't know. I was just riveted.
Yeah.
Through the whole thing. It's so unlike anything I've seen before I'm a fiend for originality. I know it's based on a book, but just getting wowed by something I didn't expect is always so fun. So it could be recency bias, but as it sits right now, I'm thinking this is my favorite of the year.
Yeah. Now, Poor Things was absolutely incredible. Like I said, Emma Stone, just mesmerizing. Like, and yeah, the amount of work she had to put in to do all these different stages was amazing. All the cast is great. I've been watching just my YouTube feed, some interviews with Willem Dafoe, like this week. He's just the fucking best, man. Like,
yeah.
God, I love that man so much. He's so great in it. Yeah. You started, production design. This is not a movie that's just, it's fucking funny, man. This movie has so many funny lines and great delivery and just great jokes. But again, has a really strong theme at its core of, like you said, empowerment, finding yourself, independence. And yeah, I mean, it's weird, but everything is intentional. And I just really appreciate that. Like, there's really no fat in this movie. Everything is there to serve the story, serve the themes. And it's just an incredibly strong film. So go see Poor Things. It's great. All right. My number one perk, you might have guessed it at this point, Godzilla Minus One. When I look at this year in movies, this is the most my shit movie that I've seen. We watched a lot of anime movies. This is the most anime movie we watched, because it just has everything I need. You know, it's got the hyper emotion. It's got the crazy action set pieces. It's got just like super cool characters that just fucking come in at the end and save the day. Like, I love this movie, man. Like, it's just, this is exactly what I'm looking for right now in my life, of just kind of like comfort movies. And the action's great. The themes are great. The characters are awesome. The amount of like effects they did with such a tiny budget just blows my mind, and how good it looks.
It's funny, too, on that effects point, the listed number that everyone's saying is 15 million was the budget for this movie. When asked about that, the director said, "I wish it had been 15 million,"
which is even more crazy.
Yeah.
Godzilla, going back to his roots of being a metaphor for the atomic bomb, was just so powerful in this movie. And like I said, like the main character being a kamikaze pilot that quote unquote failed his duty. So interesting. And I loved it. And it was weird putting together this list. I'm like, is Godzilla ever my favorite movie? And it's like, yeah, it just, this is exactly the kind of storytelling that I kind of grasp onto these days. So yeah, absolutely loved it.
Yeah, it's a great movie. I didn't connect with it as strongly, but I can understand like everything that's great about it. The effects are brilliant. The way that they use sound and cut sound for the heat ray, it is like chilling.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so good. The central arc is great. The failed kamikaze pilot finding that he's actually needed, and
he deserves to live.
Yeah. Just having a monster movie that actually has characters that you kind of care about seems atypical.
And it feels unheard of in this day and age, but they pulled it off.
Right. I think part of maybe why, like, I might have this movie even higher if it were if I had all of the context of like the terrible Godzilla adaptations that have been coming out every 2 years, I had never seen a Godzilla movie. So like from my frame of reference, all the Godzilla movies rock. Yeah. I've only seen the one, but yeah, it's just for the budget they had and the story that they're telling being as old as time, they absolutely knocked it out of the park. It's a fantastic, fantastic watch. And it was great to see on a big screen for sure.
Oh yeah. 100%. Okay. Let's get some honorable mentions in here because this year had some great movies. So what do you still want to mention?
Yeah. So, as I already mentioned, I had American Fiction on here. Just didn't quite crack the list. I don't know. I also had a movie which I really should go rewatch because I had such a fun time with it. Rye Lane, which is like up there with like my favorite rom-coms ever. Just such a awesome, fun little story about two people kind of lost finding their way. And then depending on like my mood and the time of day, I will tell you that Asteroid City was my favorite movie of last year. because I'm an absolute fiend for pretty much anything Wes Anderson does. And this movie was no different. I absolutely loved it. It's not in the top five, but I can't really explain why, because I said, I mean, any of these movies, I could make an argument was my favorite of the year. So, this is Wes at his most Wes, with really good performances, especially from Jason Schwartzman and Scarlett Johansson. Awesome meta stuff. There's a moment near the end that like just so nice, just as a quiet pause that like, I don't know, floored me. I really like that black and white scene near the end, but it's great. If you like Wes Anderson, you're going to like it. If you don't like Wes Anderson, you probably hate it.
I don't know. My parents liked it, which I was very surprised to hear.
Okay. So. Fair enough. But, I don't know. That's what I got. So I made a top five that has 8 movies on it.
Yeah, let's give a couple shout outs. I cannot believe Across the Spider-Verse didn't make my list because Into the Spider-Verse is arguably my favorite movie of all time. I think it's because it's a part one. That's what kind of held it back at the end of the day. So once Beyond the Spider-Verse thing comes out, that might make my list that year. John Wick 4 had such a fun time with that movie and some of the most creative action, like the Hotline Miami scene still, I think about it, just like, my God.
it's so fun to watch. Awesome. Yep.
Shout out to Barbie. Shout out to Ninja Turtles.
I didn't mention it, but for Barbie, like that was probably the most fun I had in a movie theater all year. So, it's not a perfect movie, but it's just such a good time. That's why lists like this are hard.
And then, I somehow miss Asteroid City, but I also love Asteroid City. So that's another great shout. Fucking great year for releases.
Great year. Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's do our third and final list, which is our top five overall movies we watched this year.
Yep.
Gloves are off. Anything you watch this year, you can put on there. I think on Letterboxd it said I watched 89 movies this year, which is pretty solid. That's my biggest year of all time.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I was putting in a lot of work.
I think I wound up in like the around 80 as well.
Yeah. I'll just run all mine just straight through. 5 was Perfect Blue. 4 was Holdovers. 3 RRR, because I watched that in January. Already been said about RRR? Fucking incredible. SS Raj movies, the GOAT. Go watch it. It's incredibly fun. Number 2, Old Boy. I got to see us in the movie theater for its anniversary this year, and this movie blew me away. I heard it's one of the classics, one of the greatest of all time. I was like, how good can it be? I've seen the hallway scene. That's cool. This movie is like, it's not even about the action, man. The villain in this movie is so devious and like evil and just incredible to watch, and everything makes sense. And yeah, I just adore this movie. And it's finally on streaming. If you haven't seen it, it's finally on Netflix and easy to watch. So please watch Old Boy. Just an incredible movie. I don't want to like spoil anything, so I'll stop talking there, but loved it. And then number 1 is Godzilla Minus One. Favorite movie I watched all year.
It's a good list. It's a good spread.
Yeah. Had a great time.
Yep. There's only one on here that I haven't already mentioned, but I got 5 is Oppenheimer, 4 The Boy and the Heron, 3 Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, 2 I got the chance to watch, we did, it was like Halloween weekend, Spirited Away.
Yeah.
Which is above Boy and the Heron because Spirited Away is my favorite Ghibli. What an amazing, beautiful movie about the spaces between.
Yeah.
I think about that movie all the time. Maybe that's my Roman Empire. but yeah, I think that's Miyazaki's absolute peak, although I haven't seen all of his films. So at least for me, and then number one, I've still got Poor Things. So
yeah,
I just great year for movies sneakily. Cause for a while there it was looking grim.
Yeah. And we'll definitely do our Oscars reaction to the nominations and our predictions when that comes around in February. We'll see who takes the awards home. But before we end this week, I got a couple bonus reviews I just want to mention, and then we'll get to what we're doing next week. So in order to try and make sure I watched everything I wanted to before making the list, I watched They Clone Tyrone this last weekend. This came out the same day as Oppenheimer and Barbie, I'm pretty sure, right?
Yeah, and it dropped on streaming that same day, which is
insane.
Crazy.
It stars Jamie Foxx, John Boyega, and Teyonah Parris. And I really liked it. It feels very much like it's trying to be Sorry to Bother You too. I think it mostly succeeds at that. Like, it's an interesting premise where they're in this, you know, community, and John Boyega kind of notices that like something's going on, and there's some cloning afoot and some other things happening. And the three of them have such great chemistry together. Like, it's just so fun to watch them go back and forth. The dialogue is really fun and funny. Cool sci-fi, cool premise. I just had a great time. Like, I don't think it reaches the highs of Sorry to Bother You, because that movie is just batshit insane.
Yes.
There's a twist in They Clone Tyrone that's like, it's fine. It's not as good as the twist in Sorry to Bother You.
It's because the twist in Sorry to Bother You is absolutely unhinged.
Yeah. that twist is arguably too crazy. But yeah, I would definitely recommend this movie. And Perk, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on it, just because I know you love Sorry to Bother You so much.
I do love that. Yeah. I love out there left field stuff. So
yeah,
I'll have to try and check it out.
Yeah, it was a great time. Definitely would recommend it. And then the other thing I watched was Marvel's What If Season 2 that came out over the holidays. For those who don't know about that, that's a animated series. It's like an anthology series, kind of. What if this happened in the MCU? And they kind of go through a scenario. And I think I liked it better than Season 1. It was a really fun time. Some really cool premises. They have like a Die Hard episode where in Stark Tower, terrorists take it over, and like Happy Hogan has to like save the day. There's one where Tony Stark goes to Sakaar, which is the planet from Thor Ragnarok, and there's like a Mario Kart death race they have to do, which is like pretty cool. So really fun premises. They end up doing kind of an overarching story that's kind of like a sequel to Season 1. And yeah, I don't like too much like details to go into. I just had a fun time. I liked it more than I thought I would, and I'm excited for more of it. So they already announced Season 3. So if you're not sick of MCU stuff yet, I actually think if you are sick of MCU stuff, this is a nice little antidote, because it's like way more creative. You can see old characters again that are fun, and you know, it's a good time. So check that out. But yeah, I think that's all we got for this week. Thank you everyone for listening to our top 5 rankings. Hopefully you're not too mad at us. But next week,
if you are mad, leave a comment.
Let us know your top 5. We're gonna be starting a new string next week of classic films. What was our cutoff again, Perk? Is it 1950?
I think it was pre-60, right?
Okay. Oh yeah, pre-60. Yeah. So watching movies that are before 1960, and we're starting with the classic 12 Angry Men. Our connection to All the President's Men is Jack Warden. He played kind of like their boss, or one of their bosses in All the President's Men. And then he's one of the jurors. So, Perk, you have seen this, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I watched it in a class or something.
Okay. And this is highly regarded as one of the best films of all time. So I'm really excited to check it out. You can watch it on Tubi, Freevee, Fubo, pretty much any like free with ad service. It's on there. So which would be pretty accessible. You also just rent it as well if you don't want to watch ads. So next week will be 12 Angry Men. And until then, thanks for watching. Bye.
See ya.